My wife's looking up some jokes on the internet. I don't know where, but this is an interesting one. Many folks want to serve God, but only as advisors. Well, I'd like to introduce you to someone who is wise, and handsome. No, it's not me. Wise and handsome, and really was very complete, a whole, a brilliant individual. This guy could honestly say that God made him in every way wise and smart and handsome, and that he knew the truth. But something went wrong with this guy, this person. Those very attributes that he had went to his head. He was wise, he was beautiful, he was perfect in all his ways. And he could say those statements and tell absolutely the truth. But something went wrong. Let's go to Ezekiel 28th chapter. Ezekiel the 28th chapter. Oh, thank you for the special music. I forgot to do that. Ezekiel, the 28th chapter. We'll start in verse 15. We'll come back and cover a lot of these other verses as we go through here. But it says, you were perfect. Perfect means entire, without blemish, sound, without spot. He was that way in all your ways. Everything he did right. Everything he did in a godly way. He did everything right. From the day that you were created, that's where he was. And we'll stop there, but because we know the rest of the story here, at least we're aware of it. But the word there for perfect is in the concordance is 8549, and it means he was entire, without blemish, sound without spot. And yet something went terribly wrong with him. Something went terribly wrong with him. And that's what we can learn from that in our own lives is the lesson really that I want to talk about here today. Let's, sorry. Let's go now to Ephesians, the second chapter. What happened to this guy? What happened to Lucifer? You know, that's who it's talking about. Something happened to him. He was perfect in all his ways. He did not have something that we are developing. He didn't have character yet. Now, character is something that, as you know, has to be developed, has to be grown within an individual. But he had everything else. And he could develop that character and may have had it to a degree for a while, because he said he was perfect in all these ways. Something went terribly, terribly wrong. We've read this many times, but today I think it will be fitting for us. Ephesians 2, verse 1. And you, we put our names there, he made alive, who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, the way things are done, according to the prince of the power of the air. I believe this is already referred to, as we know. The Spirit who now works, it's an active process going on in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as others. So all of us are in the same boat. How do we get into that state? Because somehow Lucifer, his name later changed to Satan, or the adversary, many other names. Something happened to him. There's one common thing that happened to him that happens to all of us if we're not very, very careful. Let's go to Colossians 1. And we're going to kind of catch the Colossians 1, verse 19. For it pleased the Father that in him all the fullness should dwell. In other words, all that God is was expressed through Christ. All that the Father is, you see in Christ. And by him, that is Christ, to reconcile all things to himself by him, whether things on earth or things in heaven, having made peace through the blood of his cross. Why was that necessary? And you, who once were alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now he is reconciled. I hope we can all realize that before we were converted, and even now in our post-conversion state, but especially before, we were enemies of God. I think if we don't realize that, then there's something seriously missing in our spiritual state. That we were all enemies of God before we were converted. Because we just read, we were just out there living our lives under the influence, not possession, they weren't possessed, but under the influence of this demonic realm that broadcast these attitudes to the sons of disobedience. That's what we all were. How does everybody fall under that umbrella? And how do we get out from under it? How did Lucifer fall out from being perfect in all his ways? And that's how God made him. He was just, if you were to talk to Lucifer, he would say, before he had a bad attitude, they'd say, well, how did God make you? God made me brilliant. Brilliant as far as my mind, my skills, my abilities, probably the most beautiful created being. It seems to be what it's indicating. And he was brilliant. And God gave him a lot of responsibilities in the third heaven. And he was in the throne room with God the Father and with Jesus Christ. A lot of responsibilities. And he did everything right for a long time. But something went wrong. And that's what we're here to find out on this day. Because it's tied in, obviously, with reconciliation that we've already heard about. But something went wrong with him. It's the same thing that can go wrong with all of us. Unless we're always on guard. Have to always be on guard. We know that Satan broadcasts his attitude. And we saw that. Let's go now to Genesis, the third chapter. Genesis, the third chapter. Genesis 3. And I'll start here in verse 9. And the Lord called to Adam and said to him, "Where are you?" And he said, "Well, I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself." Let's get into something deep here. Let's get into something spiritual. Our whole lives really are a repeat of the Garden of Eden. If you really study into this subject, we're just one generation away from the Garden of Eden. We just keep repeating it over and over and over. Your children will, our grandchildren will, our great-grandchildren, until Christ comes back. It's just the same thing over and over and over and over and over. Every generation deciding for itself what is right and wrong. And when they do, they fall out of relationship with God and they fear God's presence. Now, we all fear God and you understand that respect and hold God in awe. But when you're go into rebellion, become a son of disobedience, and then God begins to call us into account, we run and hide. And before we're converted, that running and hiding can take a form of fighting your calling. You don't have to raise your hand unless you want to. How many of you fought your call before you were baptized? Why? Okay. Some of you still are. No, I'm kidding. I know I did. I didn't want this. But yet the knowledge was intriguing. It just nagged at me. And yet, I got out of the Catholic thing. I didn't want that anymore. And yet all the knowledge was wonderful, but I kept wondering, but I don't really want to do it. But then God began to just pursue. It says, pursue you, come after you. I was hiding. And I think we all do to a degree. We don't realize it. There's things that God wants us to know now, but we're hiding. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to see it. So we just duck our heads under the table, and we just can't hear you. If you ever had, those of you who have little kids, you know what it's like. Johnny or Susie, come here, and they're under the table like this. They can hear you. They know what you're saying, but they don't want to hear you. And then we do that with God, don't we? All right. Now, so what led up to this thing in chapter 3? We got down to verse 10. "They heard your voice. I was afraid." And God's reply is amazing because he says, okay, you're afraid. Who told you that you were naked. Some other agency came in and now perverted your thought processes. Have you eaten of the tree which I commanded that you should not eat? And the man started the blame game. Okay, so we know about that. Now, let's go back up to the same chapter, verse 1. Now, the serpent was more cunning or subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Has God indeed said that you shall not eat of every tree in the garden?" Started a discussion with twisting their facts. Okay, now, God told you couldn't have any of the trees, couldn't you? In response, "Oh, yeah, well, we can have all the trees but the one." Oh. So the woman said to the serpent, "Well, we can eat of the trees, the fruit of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, or the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it." It's interesting, she says, "Nor touch it." I don't know if that's, she was aware that, you know, Adam told him that. Sorry, Adam told her that. But that was what, or she was adding that in. It's just an interesting little extra there. "Lest you die." Maybe she wanted to touch it, and Adam said no. I don't know. I don't know. It's just an interesting addition there, because you don't see it when God teaches Adam that. He says, "Don't eat of it. Don't touch it. I mean, don't eat of it." And the serpent said, "You're not going to lie. I mean, you're not going to die. That's a fact. You're not going to die. For, you know what? Because God knows. Then the day you eat of it, your eyes will be open. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil." You're going to be aware of good and evil. I have several translations that talk about that. We'll get into all that just here. But you will be aware of what is good and what is evil. And he says, you should be aware of what is good and evil. Now, all of us have played that game with our parents when we were young. The argument, the modern day argument is, my parents don't want me to do this, this, and this. But I think I should have a right to go out and find out for myself whether they're right. Who are they to tell me what to do? Now I'm 18, I know everything. I'm going to go figure out for myself what is right or wrong. And maybe some of what my parents taught me is right, some of what it is that isn't right, but I'll find out for myself. And God says, don't go that route. Listen to what I tell you and believe that. And we'll see how this goes full cycle by the time at the end of the millennium. And I'll just touch upon it now. At the end of the millennium, you'll have 1,000 years of peace. Satan will be loosed. He's going to use the same argument. Exactly the same. How do you know that what you've been taught for 1,000 years is right? You don't have anything to compare it to. And why do I say that? Years ago, Dr. Hay was in his office. You may have heard the story. I may have said it. He was in his office. I think this is back in the 70s. And a demon-possessed fellow came in the room and talked to Dr. Hay. And Dr. Hay figured out pretty fast that he wasn't talking to the man, but the spirit in the man. And the discussion was very brief, but it did go something to this fact. Why did you rebel? And the Spirit said to the man, when God told us all that He wanted us to do, we didn't have anything to compare it to. So how do we know that that's the best way? You know, if you talk, don't do this, if you were to talk to Satan today, he'd tell you he's absolutely right and God is absolutely wrong. He'd tell you he's done nothing wrong. Because he cannot see that he's wrong anymore. He said, all I did was exercise this brilliant mind that I had. And God wanted to limit me by giving me direction instead of me being able to express and learn and use this brilliant mind to find out what is good and bad. He wanted to say, no, you just do what I tell you. And for who knows how long, there's no time frame for us in the spirit realm, but I don't have any way of expressing it. How many centuries, eons, I don't know. How long did Lucifer do it exactly like God said? He was a light bringer, if you will. That's part of what his name was. He brought light. He sat in worked in the throne room of God, had discussions with the Father and with Jesus Christ. Very close. Something went wrong, though, somewhere along the line. Of course, I wasn't there. I'm not that old. I was going to ask Mr. Abbott, but he didn't want to talk to me that day.
So anyway, just in case you're a little not here with me tonight, right? Because you're hungry.
What happened to him? Let's go to Ezekiel 28. Go back to Ezekiel again. And I'm reading to you from various and sundry translations, so bear with me. Basically, New Living Translation, and then there'll be the New American Association translation. And anyway, you get the point. Ezekiel 28:12. Son of man, sing this funeral song to the king of Tyre. Now, the king of Tyre was an actual king, but God uses type and anti-type duality here. And you see, obviously, he's not talking about a physical king per se, but using him as a pattern. Now, this physical king had a lot of these traits, but obviously he didn't have all of them, because we'll see some of these other things. Give him this message from the sovereign Lord. This is Ezekiel 28, verse 12, I'm reading from the New Living Translation. You are the model of moral perfection, full of wisdom and exquisite in beauty. I love that, because that's really how it reads. And if you were to ask me tonight, you'd say, yeah, I am. And I'm so thankful that God has given this to me. And I've been able to serve, you know, the Godhead now for, again, time, 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, 20 million years, 100 million years. I don't know. Because they didn't have years, because time isn't relevant. But try to get that. Then something happened. It started to happen. And God let it. Something began to work in his mind. And we'll get an idea of what that something was as we go through here. Verse 13. You were in Eden. So we know that this wasn't talking about the physical king of Tyre, but here we go. The garden of God. Your clothing. So again, this is like he's sort of jumping around in thoughts. Here you were, you're the son of wisdom, but you were also in the garden. Then he talks about some of the clothing or the things that God had clothed him with. Your clothing was adorned, not in the garden, but before that. Your clothing was adorned with every precious stone, and lists all these precious stones, and they stand for the beauty and the perfection of God that he had given him, and so forth. All beautifully crafted for you and set in the finest gold. It's like, here's this beautiful apparel, and I can't help but think of what the high priest in the Old Testament would wear with all the stones and things that he had, and what Christ would wear. Well, here's Lucifer in this. And it helped to reflect, and that's the best way to think of, to reflect his beauty. They were given to you in the day you were created. What a marvelous thing. None of us had that. We were born little kids and babies and nastiness and all, you know. We delivered, well, I was talking about, never mind. You know what it is when you deliver a baby. It's a lot of muck and blood and stuff. Because we're physical. But this is very different. Here in the New Living Translation, verse 14, I ordained and anointed you as the mighty angelic guardian. You had access to the holy mountain, the throne room of God, and walked among the stones of fire. This is from another modern translation of verse 15. You were blameless in your ways from the day that you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. Here's another translation of that same verse. You were blameless in all you did from the day you were created until evil was found in you. What was that evil that was found in him? Let's go to 1 Timothy 3. 1 Timothy 3. In verse 6. 1 Timothy 3. Qualifications here for elder and so forth. But I just want to touch upon this last part here. Now, verse 6, he shouldn't be new, lest he be puffed up with pride and fall into the same condemnation or judgment of the devil. That tells us what his problem was, pride. Somewhere, somehow, at one time, it started. Lucifer began to get a little pride. And somebody, you know, would say, well, you know, you're beautiful, created me, you got all this perfect beauty. Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I wasn't there, so I can't tell you exactly every little detail. I'm just sort of trying to flesh it out a little bit. And then somehow in his thinking goes, yeah, I am. I'm wise. I'm smart. I've got all this. I'm beautiful. I've got all this talent. And I'm playing second and third fiddle over here. Push that out of there. I'm glad to be what I got this opportunity to serve at the throne room of God. But that pride, like leavening. See, all the different parallels started getting in there. Pride began to work its way into him. And then one day that pride would grow and grow until finally he just said, this is wrong. I am perfect. I am full of wisdom. I know I have lived for X billions and whatever years. And I have never sinned, and I'm still playing second and third fiddle to this deity over here. Why? And then it started. God had dealt him dirty in his own mind. And he's convinced of it to this day. And that's why all the religions of the world, I don't care if you name it, they all really want, and they're all designed ultimately to serve the God of this world, aren't they? Because that's what he wants. He feels he should be worshipped. You see how the little pride just started? And now he wants to be the deity? And we even know the scripture says that one time in the past and one time in the near future, he's going to try to overrun heaven and take it over. Because you know what? He's the one who should be doing this. He's been doing it right. And it's God who's stopping him. Now, let me give you a little bitty microscopic view of that in my own life. For years we went to the feast. For years, you know, I've been pastoring churches and so forth. And I would get a sermonette from time to time, and maybe a split sermon, but I never got a sermon. And then I got to do stuff for the youth, and I got to speak to the youth, I got to speak to the elderly people, but I wouldn't get a real true blue sermon for a long time. Guess what? I don't know why I can't speak sermons. I give sermons all the time at home. Shut up, Tom. What was it? It was pride. Why can't I speak? I can do that. Shut up, Tom. So they had to go back and pray some more about it. My pride wanted recognition. I know you've never been guilty of that. And then when I finally got over that, I said, you know, enjoy the peace. You can go feast. You don't have to give a long sermon. It was a couple of years after that I started giving sermons. I guess God just said, you know, until you overcome that pride, I'm not going to do it. But I could feel the resentment in me. Why is that? Because Satan knows the game. He plays it. He's done it. Got the t-shirts. Been there. But I could feel it in me. And it was scary to feel it in me. God always will bring you, if you want to be a true servant of God, well, God will bring you to the end of yourself where you don't matter anymore. And then he can do something with you. But as long as we think we're important, as long as we think God needs us, you're on the shelf. How many men have we lost over the years who thought they were really something? And without them, the whole church had crumbled. Guess what? All gone. All out of park. It was pride that got to him. Let's go back to Ezekiel 28:17. I can tell you, I remember feeling that in my guts, that resentment. And it scared me. It didn't scare me enough to stop right away, but I had to work on it. I had to pray about it. And then when I got over that, I'm enjoying the sermons. That's all right. Okay. Ezekiel 28:17. We're back to this thing of pride. Your heart was filled with pride because of your beauty. Yeah, he was beautiful. And when he said he was beautiful, he wasn't lying. But when pride got in, he says, yeah, I'm beautiful. And because I am, I deserve more. But when he's humble, he says, I'm beautiful because God made me that way and I'm blessed and I want to share. See, the beauty of him was not just the outward adornment, but what God had given him in early stages. And God wanted him to develop it, if you will. But again, it turned into arrogance and resentment. Your wisdom was corrupted by what? The love of splendor. He loved himself so much, as it says in this translation, that love of self corrupted his beauty. And just as we couldn't look on God and live right now because of the brightness and the beauty of him, if we would see Satan in all his ugliness, he would kill us. But he doesn't come to us in that way, does he? I don't want to get into a lot of details, but when I've worked with people who've had demon problems, you can just feel the darkness. And you can just feel it. And the resentment and the anger that's there. And usually, though, a very self-righteous, whiny approach to it. Really unbelievable. So anyway, because of his pride got to him. Well, wasn't he beautiful? Wasn't he doing that right? Hadn't he been serving God all this time? Yeah. And he deserved more than that. It got to him, didn't it? Isaiah 14. Like I said, I saw that in myself, and it scared me. And I didn't overcome it overnight. I didn't. That's where you have a wife sometimes. She gives you that little gentle nudge. Hey, knucklehead, bang. No, she never does that. But she says, you know, baby, you need to pray about that. Just hate it when she does that. And she was very gentle about it. Because I told her, it bothers me. Because don't I give sermons back home? So, anyway. And I can't explain it. It's just something in your gut that you start eating at you. All right. Isaiah 14:12. It's like a statement of an expression of incredibility. Incredible. Oh, God's looking at it. What an incredible fall. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. See? Son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground. Boy, have you taken a fall. You who have weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will, self-will, driven by pride, ascend into heaven. That's when he first rebelled. I'm going to take over. I don't have to do anything less than that. I'm going to the top. It didn't happen overnight, that attitude, did it? I don't know if he and God had discussions over it, but I know God was aware of his issues. But God knows all that's going on. And I think God the Father and Jesus Christ probably watched when they first saw that beginning in them. You know, God, at that first time, working with Lucifer, watching sin develop, that had to have been very painful for them. They've never experienced that before. The Father and Son never experienced sin, because they don't sin. And here's one of their created beings that they love, and he's slipping from them. See, that had to have been very painful. And to watch that descent. Why didn't God just wave a magic wand and stop it? Because, you know, God doesn't do things like that. Created beings need to make choices. But he got to this point. This is the in-line process. I will ascend into the heavens. I will exalt my throne above the angels. That's stars. Above the angels of God. Now, is that going to be enough? I will also sit on the mount of the congregation. I'm going to the throne room, if you will. On the furthest sides of the north, where the third heaven is. That's how the Bible describes it. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High God. And no one will tell me no. That's a little addition there. Yeah. See that? And it was fed by that pride. The same pride that we saw in Genesis 3:5. I'll quickly go back to that. Genesis 3:5. For God knows that the day that you eat your eyes will be open and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. Well, now Satan decides for himself what is good and evil, and he's got the world all believing evil is good and good is evil. And God's instructions to us is come out of that. And it's hard to come out of it because we're the proverbial frog in the hot water. The water gets warmer and water. The water gets warmer and warmer, and we don't recognize it until we're boiling. It says Lucifer meant day star. He was to be a bringer of light. Verse 14, another translation reads this in the same verse. I will rise above the heights of the clouds. I will be compared to the Most High. That's how another modern translation has it. What arrogance. Fed by pride. And yet God gave it all to him. Not the arrogance. The perfect. All those other things we're talking about. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, as another translation says, and I will make myself like the Most High. I think you see the point. Luke 10:18. Sorry about that on the mic. Luke 10, verse 18. I'm glad I get to speak today. It's hard, I know, when you've got an empty stomach. So when Ward falls asleep, somebody just wake him up. For those of you who have diabetes and other health issues like that, I know this is a hard day for you. God blesses you for it. It's not easy. Some of us have those physical ailments. I know when my wife was pregnant, she always seemed to be pregnant during atonement. I'm not sure how that all worked out. But she would just be sick all the time. So she, during church, not on atonement, but during church and the rest of the week, she'd be nibbling on crackers because I guess the crackers are absorb acid in the stomach and so forth. And then on atonement, she wouldn't eat anything and it would just be gone. Sundown come. Okay, we won't talk about what happened. It was just amazing. Every one of our children was like that. Atonement, fine. You know, before atonement, okay, you know. Getting sick stuff. Atonement. I won't say she felt good, but she wasn't sick. And then right after the sun go down, blah. Okay, here we go. Luke 10:18. Jesus refers to this first rebellion when Satan was cast out, when he went first to try to take over. But he mentions it just very briefly. Behold, I give you... Oh, sorry, wrong. Let me give verse 17. The 70 returned after they'd been casting out demons with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to you in your name. Boy, that's great. And they were kind of feeling, wow, this is kind of cool. Right? You cast out demons in your name and they come out screaming and this guy's better. And that's wonderful, isn't it? But now, they had a little vanity building there, didn't they? Yeah, you know, I cast out old so-and-so, whatever his name, you know. I cast out this or that demon. Yeah, I did it in Jesus' name. Well, that's fine. But who did it? Who did the casting out, really? It was God, not the man. And Jesus sort of draws them up short a little bit. And he said to them, you think that's neat that you know you can cast out a demon in my name? And that's good. That's very good. But don't let it go to your head. Guess what? I saw Satan fall from like lightning from heaven. I saw the rebellion. And I saw him being cast. It's as if he was on the earth looking up and here it comes. And who knows? The horrors that were on the earth then. So, what are we looking at here? We heard about the need for atonement. That's one of the meanings of this day. See that in Romans 5, verse 11. Today we're to be humbling ourselves. Some say, why do we fast? What's the point of fasting? It should be to show us just how temporary we are. Now tomorrow you're going to feel fine. You say, atonement. I did pretty good on atonement. Right now you're saying, atonement. Ay, ay, ay. Yeah. Why? And that's not a bad thing. When we go, atonement, ay, ay, ay. You have friends that tell them you fast for 24 hours without food or water. They say they would die. Because most people, never, especially in this country, never do that. In many parts of the world, they eat once a day. That's it. So they could probably understand that. Anyway, my point is, I don't know what my point is. I got well off on the track on there. Anyway, atonement, Romans 5, verse 11. Not only that, but we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received atonement. As it says in the Old King James, you have reconciliation. It's the same thing. If
you look at your concordance, you and I are reconciled to God because you are so great. You are so smart. You're so gifted. You're so talented. Is that why God called us? No. That Muslim center, I don't know why he called me. Can't figure that one out. But he did. And we are now in that reconciled state. But Satan is always after us to get to us through pride. And through other areas as well. But we're talking about this here today. And like I say, when I was struggling with that, and I'm sure all of you had one area, something like this in your life, you know it's wrong. But you have a battle in your mind. You can make it right. See? And even when you're hearing that battle going on in your mind, you say, that's wrong, Tom. You know better now. Oh, shut up. I don't want to hear that. That's the conscience, God working through the conscience. And that's exactly what happened to Satan. It's really, like I said, it's the same thing over and over and over. Just different names, different centuries. Things may seem a little more complicated, but in a sense, they're really not. Let's go to Revelation 20. I've already referred to this. I don't know, several years ago, it just happened, everybody was speaking about this in one way or another, and then the last great day, one minister spoke on it and said, wow, I hadn't really heard much on this particular subject. You know it's in the Bible, but you haven't heard too much about it on this particular subject. And that one year, it really hit it a lot. Revelation 20, verse 6. This talks about us. Blessed and holy is he who is part in the first resurrection. That's when Christ returns. The trumpet blast, as we know all that. We rehearsed that already. Over such a second death has no power. Okay, because we'll be spirit beings. They shall be priests of God and of Christ and shall reign with him 1,000 years. And that's where we're at to go celebrate. We can eat all we want for that one. Now when 1,000 years are expired, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle. Battle who? God. It's after 1,000 years of peace. All right, we'll need a little bit more here. Whose number, they're coming together to do battle, last part of verse 8, whose number is as the sand of the sea. Can you count? Can you count sand in your hand when you go to the beach and look at it? You can't. There's so many. Huh? After 1,000 years of peace? Of hearing the truth preached for 1,000 years? For 1,000 years, generation after generation, baptized, converted, growing, coming along. And then this God allows Satan to be interjected back into the human race. Verse 10, the devil who deceived them was cast. Now, how did he deceive them? I submit to you, be through the very same thing, pride. Pride which will appeal to the ego, because Satan's really the father of ego, if you want to. The self, building the self, worshiping the self, what it's all. One of some of these silly magazines, you know, you go like to doctor's offices or something and you pick up, and it's just these moronic magazines about stars and movie stars, and I don't know if they ever have a thought in their head, but anyway, it's just nothing of depth, of anything of character, nothing. It's just craziness. Anyway, I'm off the track. How do these people after 1,000 years? Satan's going to be released, and what will it be his argument? Let me tell you something. All you know is what God has told you. How do you know that's better? How do you know? You haven't seen anything. You haven't tried anything else. Don't you have a right to go make your own mistakes? Did God make you stupid where you just had to be a robot to figure out, and he'll just tell you what to do, and you go, yes, I will do what you want me to do. See, that's going to be his argument. He says, you say you're a free moral agent. But where's the free moral agency? And God will step back and say, I've taught you for 1,000 years.
What are you going to do? God taught him in the garden. Then he stepped back. What will you do? We saw that. And so most, it says there'll be so many who will rebel against God after 1,000 years because they'll fall for that age-old proven tactic. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Satan doesn't need to fix this. And people, yeah. You know, I've never thought of that before. Why does God have the right to tell me what to do? Well, let me see. He created you. See? So what happens is you have a world full of religion, but not too many folks, at least in some areas of the world, who really aren't converted. It's the same thing. Leviticus 16. You know this story, but I want to cover just a little bit here. This is another part. There's lots and lots to this day, isn't there? And we heard the storms coming last night. Of course, we didn't really get too bad here. That was good, but just a little north and west of us, I guess they got some pretty heavy rains and so forth. But I remember, and you probably do, those of you who have been in church a long time, atonement. It just seemed, at least up in Washington State where I started out, every atonement, these massive windstorms would come. I mean, really bad winds. And blow the dust, you wouldn't know anything about that. Blow the dust real bad, and the winds would just be howling. And people just determined to get to church. Those in those days, you couldn't hardly beat them off to get to church. They'd just driving and hanging on for dear life to get to church. And so I thought, well, I wonder if Satan's trying to stop the Day of Atonement for some folks. Anyway, Leviticus 16, verse 1. Now, the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron because they went in and decided they were going to worship God the way they wanted to. Did they have pride? And they offered profane fire before the Lord and died. I'll worship God. We will worship God the way we want. And in His own temple, and we're the sons of the high priest. And God says, can't have that. And that evil Old Testament God killed them. That's what you'll be told in the world. That old evil judgmental God of the Old Testament killed them. Well, you know, that's probably the merciful thing to do, and He'll resurrect them and they'll have another shot. You know, I bet you'll do it right next time. They won't even think about going right or left. And the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to go just any time into the holy place inside the veil, they call the Holy of Holies, before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, lest he die. I'm consistent here. For I will appear in the cloud above the mercy seat. A second here. Thus Aaron shall come into the holy place with the blood of the young bull of a sin offering and the ram of a burnt offering. He shall put the holy linen tunic. Now he dresses up in this the priest's clothing. Not as beautiful as what Lucifer had, but the same kind of principle here. And the linen trousers on his body, and he shall be girded and so forth, all these different things he's going to wear. Verse 5, and he shall take from the congregation of the children of Israel 2 kids, the goats as a sin offering, 1 ram for the burnt offering. And Aaron shall offer the bull as a sin offering. He will offer the bull as an offering to make atonement for himself and for his house. And he shall take the 2 goats. First he had to offer for his own sins. And he takes the 2 goats and presents them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. And Aaron shall cast the lots of the 2 goats, 1 lot for the Lord, the other for the Azazel goat, or the Azazel goat. Scapegoat's a bad word, a bad translation. One of the lot of the Lord, that's referring to God, Christ, the one who became Christ. And scapegoat is one for Lucifer, or Satan. And Aaron shall bring the goat which the Lord's hand, the Lord's lot fell, and offer a sin offering. And the goat on which the lot fell on the Azazel goat or Azazel goat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement upon it, and to let all and to let it go as the scapegoat in the wilderness. Now, what's the scapegoat in the wilderness? You see in the New Testament a reference to. Satan's going to be put into a condition of restraint for that 1,000 years. He'll be put into constraint. Then after the 1,000 years up, he goes back permanently into that condition of restraint. And can you imagine the insane asylum that place will be? With all these demonic minds forever just at each other. It's impossible to imagine. But that's what happened to them. Even those angels that went before they became demons, they were loving and caring beings. And yet, because of his persuasive skills, Lucifer was able to bring one out of three with him. And now they are hopelessly gone. And yet, the Day of Atonement is, it reminds us of that. But also, the Day of Atonement reminds us of our calling, that we are called to become at one meant with God. And we started that process of being reconciled at baptism, to be reconciled with God. We accept that this death of Christ in our stead in faith. And then through the process of conversion, that process of growing and understanding more and more about God and reconciliation and coming into getting closer and closer to God, till we're finally, when Christ comes back, if we're alive and remain, he'll say, here's somebody whose mind and heart is set to do my will because they want to. Or if they're in their graves and they had that same spirit and they had that same attitude, he'll resurrect them into spirit bodies which will match their spirit mind. And they'll be forever with the Lord. He says to comfort one another with these words. So that's what this day pictures. It has a lot of meaning for us. It has a lot of meaning for us. But the important thing is that we don't want to fall into the trap of Satan. And we want to keep in mind that we are going through this reconciliation process now. And that we have this bright future to look forward to help bring other people to understand the things that we know. Now, as God calls, but also during the millennium. And who knows beyond that? I'm curious to know we know what the plan of God up to the second, when the millennium is over and all the wicked are burned and now they're dust under our feet. Does God say game over? Now just sit down and watch TV? I don't think so. I don't know, but it's going to be awesome beyond what we can comprehend. And we have that door open to us because of the Day of Atonement.